Hello, everyone. Welcome into Grip Lock Foundation Disc Golf's weekly podcast. I'm Hunter, joined as always by Trevor. And before we get into all the great stuff going on down here, the United States Disc Golf Championship and Throw Pink Women's Disc Golf Championship, let's take a moment to thank our sponsors. Do you know what's spookier than seeing a black cat on Halloween? It's shaving what? Below the belt with anything other than the Manscaped. When it comes to below the waist grooming, there's no need to carve your pumpkins this Halloween because Manscaped is here to upgrade your grooming experience. Join the 2 million men worldwide by going to manscaped.com for 20% off and free shipping with the code GRIPLOCKED.
Have you ever tried to trim down south and it turned into a Freddy Krueger film?
Hate that.
Well, luckily, Manscaped is here to save the day and make sure you're smelling fresh with their new refined body wash. Fellas, the ladies love their signature scent and it will scare away all those vampires.
Their finely tuned Pew products feature a cutting edge, ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents. Thanks to their advanced skin safe technology, the Lawnmower 4.0, we've been talking about this for so long, is easily the greatest ball trimmer on the planet. And did I mention this trimmer is waterproof too? That's right. Get this trimmer in your shower essentials and get 20% off and free shipping with the code GRIPLOCKED at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code GRIPLOCKED over at manscaped.com. Thanks again to Manscaped for supporting GRIPLOCKED.
That's factual because I left mine in the shower for like a couple weeks.
Mine still stays in the shower.
Stays in the shower.
Keep it in there.
Doesn't matter. Just throw it in the ocean. Don't do that.
Don't do that because then you won't be able to get, actually do that and then use code GRIPLOCKED to get a replacement one.
Don't litter. Anyways.
Also, yeah, valid point. Don't litter. But before, we are actually down here at the United States Disc Golf Championship. We're going to be on site all week. And in case you missed it, this is your first of four daily episodes of Grip Lock you're going to be getting. This is going to be the longest one. This is the pre-USDGC segment. This is also our normal Grip Lock where we break down other things going on outside of the tournament. After this, you will be getting more of like a 30-minute minimum episode. Some episodes, if there's a lot that goes on in the day, might go longer, depends on kind of what the storylines come up, but those will be happening each morning to prep you for the live stream. If you're interested in purchasing the live stream, I'll put the link in the description down below so you can check out the pay-per-view to pick that up and be able to follow along live, or you can also follow along on UDisc. Trevor is going to be doing a Brody tracker on his Twitter.
Yeah, make sure you're following me, FTG_Trevor. I would not normally just plug my Twitter, but I am going to be following Brody and live tweeting shot by shot. So if you want to, you know, wherever you are, get updates on wherever Brody is, even if he's not on live coverage or whatever's going on, you can turn on Twitter notifications. By the way, the idea for this came from Tiger Tracker. It used to be a Twitter account that was actually paid by the Golf Channel to track Tiger Woods. And it's great because you can just turn on your Twitter notifications and you can just get a shot-by-shot update. So that's kind of what I'm trying to do. Nice. For all the Brody fans.
And then I will be popping around to pretty much a bunch of different cards, tweeting about some of it, covering some of it on Instagram stories. We can't film the actual shots happening, but I'll probably like take a break every few holes that's going on and kind of give you a recap of kind of what's going down. So be sure to follow us basically on all of our social media channels to keep up to that. But at least minimum, make sure you're subscribed here. On YouTube, or if you're a regular listener on other platforms, you don't have to do anything else. Thank you. You're enough.
Wow. Great job.
Sometimes people need to hear that, you know?
They do. Yeah, they do need to hear that.
Connor, you're enough. Connor had a stressful day getting this beautiful podcast set up with all the new stuff.
You made it work, though.
And it, you know, you killed
now
it.
Now I've got all this great stuff going on.
All this great stuff is
and
just
I've
going
got
on.
Brody over here hanging out with me.
I'm about to leave.
He's about to leave.
No. Well, that's okay.
That's when Grip Lock will get real. But before we get
we
into the United
what
States...
what we want to say in front of
our Brody Smith segment after yeah, that.
Before we get into the USDGC stuff, big news broke. We talked about it where the Pro Tour is the official tour of disc golf now. Mm-hmm. The National Tour is no more. I understand they merged, but I'm not a fan of this National Tour still getting the credit of being like... Or the PGA being like, the Pro Tour is now the official tour of the PGA. Now, the Pro Tour is the only thing we got going next year.
Yeah.
When it comes to the PGA. But we already knew
PGA,
that.
PGA, they finesse.
Yeah, it is a classic twist, you know?
Yeah.
The 2022 schedule has officially come out. So let me pull that up here. Let me just read through it. And then we'll kind of talk about some of the changes, what the Pro Tour has adapted, brought over from the National Tour, some of the events that they're going to be highlighting.
So you read and them then, off, and then like I'll a big tell change. You if it's a National Tour or not.
Okay, Las Vegas Challenge. Actually, this is a good quiz for Trevor.
Yeah.
Las Vegas Challenge.
That's not a National Tour.
It used to be, but it wasn't. You're right.
Yeah.
Waco.
Also not a National
Texas Tour. States.
That is a National
that
Tour.
That was. Then we go to the first major of the year, the PGA Champions Cup, which we'll talk about that more in a second.
Yeah.
Jonesboro Open.
Not a National Tour.
Dynamic Discs Open.
That is a national tour.
OTB Open.
Not.
Portland Open.
That one was going to be a national tour, but was not after it got canceled because they changed it from a national tour at Beaver State Fling to the Portland Open.
Wow. I thought I threw him for a loop there. Yep. This isn't even Trevor trivia. Well, this is...
It's like reverse trivia right now.
What's something with H?
Hunter's Hivia.
Hunter's...
That sounds like a disease.
Thomas Trivia.
Thomas Trivia. There we go.
Duh.
Duh. The Preserve Championship.
That is not a national tour.
Then we go to the second major of the year, which we'll again talk about this a little bit later. United States Women's Disc Golf Championship. Happening in July. Mm-hmm. Then we're going back to Ida Wild Open.
Not a national tour.
Boom. Another major. European Open. Coming back to the States. Great Lakes Open.
Not a national tour.
Ledgestone.
Not a national
tour. Des Moines.
Not a national tour.
And then the PDGA World Championship, August 30th to September 3rd. So that right there is the regular season.
How many was on there? Three? Two.
Yeah,
two. Just DDO and Texas State.
DDO and Texas States. Which DDO...
That's not really much of an absorption. That's like a dissolving, and then we just hung on to two events.
Some are going to stay around as Silver Series, I believe.
That's true. We'll probably see a lot of them as Silver Series. But still, they're not the big-time events anymore.
Yeah.
So that's interesting.
You might be saying, where is the Green Mountain Championship and the MVP Open? Those are now a new thing, which is the playoffs. So
man,
essentially,
I could have sworn somebody said something about they should do playoffs at some point.
I think it was literally last week.
I think it was last week.
It was last week's podcast.
Obviously, their idea had existed much longer before I said that. I'm not claiming that. But I think it is funny. I think Hunter and I have to have at least two or three. Between the tour card, that the absorption of the national
tour. Well, the tour card hasn't fully come to fruition. It's just obvious that it's coming.
Happening. We've
it's
got like three or four on the board this year.
Yeah.
As like things
we're just ding, 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 ding. Which makes you wonder, what else are we going to be right about?
The playoffs thing, that's just cool though. Because this is one that I didn't think was like super important. I was like, that would be cool.
I didn't expect it, but I love this. Go. So Green Mountain Championship, from what I can tell, is going to have like a limited field of about 100 or so. And then the MVP MVP Open is going to be cut down to about 80. And then you'll go to USCGC, and the Pro Tour finale is going to be probably about the normal 32
range. Did we actually hear those numbers?
I saw them like being kind of projected, but they're not official yet. They said more information will be coming out in the next like week or two.
So I wouldn't hate if they were lower.
So we'll know those numbers a little bit sooner. I don't hate those numbers, though. But one of the biggest things I like about this is it basically, Worlds always felt weird. And the event right after Worlds always felt even weirder. Excuse me. Mainly because it felt like the season built up to Worlds, but then the season wasn't over. And there was like this weird like...
You had to like gain
post-world.
Momentum again.
Yeah, it was like a post-World season.
Right.
The post-season. That's what playoffs are. It makes so much sense. But like... Because we talked about it. We didn't talk about it being right after Worlds.
Talk about what?
Playoffs.
No. No.
But that's the part I love the most.
Yeah, it ends the regular season.
It's like the regular season actually builds to Worlds. To me, this sounds crazy coming out of my mouth, but it'll make Worlds feel more prestigious. Yeah,
it's like the last everybody can attend this event, and then all of a sudden we're in the playoffs.
Yeah, and then we're into the playoffs, because even USDGC is a limited event.
Yeah.
So they're all limited events the rest of the way, which is amazing. Man.
And that's going to be crazy, too, because that's going to add prestige to those playoff events.
Yeah.
Because now you're winning out of a limited field, too.
Exactly.
Like, you don't even... That's crazy that people might not even get to the MVP Open. Oh, I love it. Yeah. I love how cutthroat that is. Like, there's guys that want to play MVP all year because it's their bucket list course, and they don't even make it.
Yeah, I mean...
I love that.
I saw there's someone on Twitter that was came after me and be like, I hope this is in the future. What about all the local pros in the area?
No.
And I'm like...
This is a tour.
There's plenty of events at Maple Hill all year that they can play. They're a local pro.
Yeah.
They're not a pro.
Right.
Local pro... That's like playing minor leagues. Well, not even, because that's Silver Series. Like, there's going to be ways that you can get enough points to be on this at Maple Hill if you want to be at Maple Hill.
Yeah.
There's going to be ways you can do it.
Well, it doesn't even sound like they're cutting the field down that heavy either. Like,
no, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
If you attended every event, you probably should be in the top 80.
Right. Yeah. I mean, in the playoffs, too, like that's another thing. The point there is like you're not only getting points by playing well, but they're rewarding people who are going to make the whole tour, because just going to every event is a huge advantage.
Yeah.
So that's
now again, the numbers of 100 to 80, like that's just kind of speculation right now. They haven't released the full detail of the playoffs.
It'll be in that ballpark.
We don't know exactly when it'll be, but yeah, very excited about that announcement. Personally, now back to the first major of the year, the Champions Cup. Now that we've been down here around a lot of players,
a lot of chatter.
There is a lot of chatter about the Champions Cup coming up in April. I've heard it from multiple players that A, they're just not really excited for the event. Remember, this is the one that is like the stroke play, match play hybrid. I think the consensus I'm getting from the majority of players is it would be a fun exhibition event, but it's not a major,
right?
Or it shouldn't be a major. It is a major.
Yeah,
but
they don't like that a major championship is being decided by something other than just stroke play.
Exactly.
Which makes sense.
And so
the game that
there
we
are
play.
Rumors going around, and we'll see if anything comes to fruition of this, of several players boycotting said event, which is crazy because it's a major, basically giving up their shot at a major title to make a stance of like, our voices aren't being heard, which is the same exact thing that we talked about with the national tour. We talked about so many times is basically like, it just seems like when players voice their opinion on the pro tour, they're heard. And when they voice it against the PDGA, they're like silenced or told they're wrong, basically. So, you know, I'm yet to meet a player. I'm sure they exist. I just personally haven't talked to them. That is excited to play the Champions Cup in the exact way it is. I've met players who are excited to play the course. I've met a lot of players who love the name.
Champions Cup is a sick name.
But I'm yet to meet a player who is just genuinely excited to play the Champions Cup in the current format.
Yeah, my whole thing is I think the Champions Cup, first of all, you need to just cut it to four rounds of stroke play. And then I think if you want to make a new major, the best way to introduce it is to build a new course so that it's played, so that this major is played at a course that has never been played before. Because you could say, well, why don't they just play like a major at Maple Hill? But it's like, there's already an event at Maple Hill that has like prestige. So let that have its thing.
That's a similar issue Worlds has every year.
Yeah. I wish that the majors were, I don't mind a rotation. Like certain events in golf, like the U.S. Open, have a rotation, but the rotation is between, like, there are always certain courses that you can expect the U.S. Open. It also helps
add to the prestige.
It's a little bit different in golf because there are so many golf courses that you can have a rotation of like four or five courses, and then those four or five courses don't really need to have an event the rest of the year.
Yeah.
Whereas like we can't have a rotation of four or five disc golf courses that are Worlds worthy and then not really have events at those courses.
Yeah, because there need to be something.
So Worlds, the rotation is fine, whatever. But for this Champions Cup, I'd like to see them just like have a new course and settle.
Well, I wouldn't even mind it being a WR Jackson and just
WR Jackson. There's no Hall of Fame Classic anymore.
Exactly. There's no event at WR Jackson anymore. WR Jackson, I think the last time they played it was probably the best holes, but the worst condition. It's just because it was so freshly logged.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind that either. Bringing back a course that's
Back like WR Jackson / IDGC, great spot.
And
players are excited to get back there, but you got to listen to the players. And so it'll be interesting. Again, there's a lot of chatter right now. It'll be interesting to see how many players let the rubber meet the road and actually boycott a major. Because if I'm a player, like, yeah, I'm not happy about it, but I'm also don't want to give up my shot at a major. You know what I mean?
I think
it's a weird line.
If I were a player and I knew enough guys were committing to not going, I would hop on board.
It's like a skip day in high school.
Yeah.
Like if you're one or two people in high school skipping class, you're gonna get in trouble. But if you get 10 to 15 people, they can't suspend all of you.
Right. You gotta hope that enough of like the bigger voices and personalities in disc golf and the more influential players
get behind it
first. Because then I could definitely see it happening.
Yeah, so it'll definitely be interesting to see what comes to fruition from that as the year kind of progresses, because it's only April. So
yeah, that'll be early in the season.
Yeah, so there's three events, and then you're at a major.
Here's the good news: if you're running the Champions Cup, okay, and this is like all happening, you have time to fix this, and it's the only fix you need to make is okay, we're playing stroke play instead of like
it's easy fix.
You don't have to change anything.
Well, the thing I feel bad for is like the TD Robert Leonard is probably going to catch a lot of flack for the event because he's the one running it.
Right, but it's not his idea.
But he was basically like brought in to run it because he's a great TD.
Right.
And he's run majors before, but it wasn't his idea.
Yeah, it has nothing to do, like the TD, like can put on a great event. It's the format
format. I think the major is going to be ran at a major standard. But
as foundation people, let's make sure we don't give the TD slack.
No. Now, if something does go wrong that is the TD's fault, I've played many Robert Leonard events. I don't think that's going to happen. Right. I'm just saying I feel bad for him because you get offered to run a major. Of course, you want to run the major if, like, you're a great TD. But then, like, they're like, here's the major. And it's like, Mom, I really want a major. And she's like, we got majors at home. And this is the major at home. You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
What the heck is that?
Where's it coming from?
I have no idea.
Is Brody's room above us?
For those of you that may be confused, Brody was rolling his back out upstairs with like a, he has like a vibrating like foam roller, and it was so loud, he's right above us, that it shook the entire room.
It's a foam roller.
Yeah, okay.
Gosh, that was so scary.
That was terrifying. I thought, I legit...
It's not like that?
But it was on the floor above our head. Oh my gosh, okay. All right, well, with that all going down, we are back, and it is time to throw it over to Trevor's trivia.
Yeah, all right. Trevor.
What do you got for me?
A lot of USDGC-themed trivia to do for these episodes.
I let my heart rate come back down.
You would say that you know Winthrop Gold pretty well.
I'm pretty confident in my knowledge of this event in Winthrop Gold. Yes.
Okay, so you would say you've played the course now like twice in the last 2 days. So you would say you know each hole pretty well.
Yeah, I would say course wise, I know it. I would be pretty confident I know it very well.
Okay. So if I were to ask you the distance of each hole, how much of a cushion do you think you would need in feet to get through all 18? I like giving you the option.
Oh, all 18?
So you got to go through all 18 and give me the distance, and then how much of a cushion do you think you need?
Oh, like the total.
What?
Or like per hole? Or
we're going to go per hole, and it's going to add on how much you're off by.
Yeah. But I'm saying, so total, I need to tell you the total cushion.
Yes, total cushion.
That's tough.
I like putting it in your hands, so I didn't give you one to just think like it was ridiculous.
I'm gonna say I could get within 3,000 feet.
3,000.
Oh, okay, that is a lot.
I was going to say like 400.
I was thinking 200 per hole. Well, because it's definitely 100, because I can get the first number, I think, pretty close every time. But like going from like 250 to like if I'm saying 280 and it's 210.
Right, that's 70 feet.
Yeah.
Not like 200.
But I was trying to give myself a decent pitch. Okay, we'll go 2,000.
Oh my.
That's 100 foot a hole. That's a little over 100 feet per hole.
We'll set it at 2,000 if you don't.
That's impressive, is it not? Within 100 feet per hole.
When I came up with this game, I was thinking about giving you like 300 feet.
Trevor, we're talking specific feet.
Yeah.
So like if hole one is, I say 280 and it's 210, there goes 70 feet out the window, and I was close.
I didn't think you would. I thought you would get a lot closer.
Well, I'm not. I don't have the holes memorized. I'll know the general range.
There are certain things in disc golf that I can't tell if you're like, oh yeah, hole seven. Everybody knows that's 427 feet. Like I didn't know if this.
No, there's also A and B pins. Like which pin are you playing to?
This is A. This is the layout they're using.
Okay, so like hole 13
for rounds one and four.
A pin is the close pin.
Let's just okay.
Okay, let's just
try.
We'll just see what happens.
Let's just go for it.
Hole one.
Hole one.
I believe it's 285.
It is 258 feet.
See, like if I only had 300 feet, I'm terrified right now. Instead, all right. I'm chilling. Hole
so,
two.
You're at 27 right now.
Hole two, I want to say, is a decent bit over 800 feet. But that is wrong because I can get there easily in two shots. So we're going to say 697.
Okay. Thank goodness. It's 632.
All right. See, again, sweating if it's 400, chilling here.
697 minus... 632, so that's 65 feet plus 20 cents. You're at 92 now.
Are you keeping this in notes or something?
I've got it.
Okay.
I've got it.
Hole three. It's downhill. I throw mid decently hard. I'm going to say it's downhill 380.
375.
Heck yeah.
There you go.
Okay. Hole four. So hole four is a tough one because like how do they measure the distance? It's got to be by the true line.
Yeah, it's definitely the
so true. So I'm going to say 550.
Great guess. 535.
Nice. Okay, hole five.
You're doing really well.
Hole five, I think, is like 960.
960. It's 1125.
Oh, see, that's a big one there.
You only thought 960.
Well, I was thinking like I can go... See, again, it's tough because, like, I think the basket, like, if straight line to the basket, I don't think it's 11-something feet. So it must be going, like, straight on land and then across.
Yeah, that is a tricky one to, like, figure out, like, where they're deciding to go across.
Because I'm thinking, like, I can get pin... I could realistically get close to pin high in two shots, so I added more to that.
Right.
But okay. Then, like, the shot across adds the extra feet I'm missing.
I see what you're saying. Okay. That's fair. It wasn't a huge miss.
Hole six... 390.
371.
Okay. Hole seven.
Is really that far?
I was just thinking I had to flip up a Zeus and hyzer it out.
Yeah, it's a rip.
Hole 7. It's got to be kind of close to 300. I'm going to go 320.
287.
Yeah, I almost said 285. I just didn't know if the downhill made it play so slow. What am I at distance-wise through 7 holes?
Let me check here. You are at... Hold on.
How long is hole 7?
285.
That makes sense.
329 is where you're at right now.
Okay. That's pretty good.
No, not bad. Not bad at all.
Hole 8. This is tricky. I'm going to say it's about 800 feet.
It is 732.
Okay. I'm okay with that. Hole 9, the new pin. I remember thinking it's a little too far for me to throw a straight hyzer, but I tried getting there with a vulture, so I'm going to say like 370.
370 for hole 9. Hole 9 is 344.
Okay. See, again, hole 10, I know it's 490 to the pin, but they don't play it 490. I think they play it closer to like 580 for hole 10.
580 for hole 10? 470.
That's not true.
For hole 10? 472.
That's not true.
What are you talking
about? I'll bet my life the tee pad is not that.
It does say 5 something on there.
Yeah. This is UDIS distance.
That's interesting. Why would they not have the correct distances on UDIS?
They're doing GPS. So it's 470 to the pin.
Interesting. I think I won't penalize you for that, but let's fact that in from now on.
Well, that should be one of the only holes that really affects it. 13 will be interesting.
Yeah. That's a good point though.
I think I'm within like 50 feet there. So I'm willing to take like 30 foot hit. Okay. That's a good compromise.
That's fair. That's a good point though. Yeah, you're right.
Pull up the caddy book.
Okay.
Then we can get the accurate one.
You're right.
Redo this whole segment. Just kidding.
I definitely distinctly remember seeing it 5 something and being like, what?
Yeah.
Because they take it the distance like from island to pin.
Yeah.
Okay. Caddy book.
I think I'd said 550. I think it's a little shorter than that in the caddy book, but I could be wrong.
I think it might be like 556. Like that number sticks out to me. Still loading. Here we go. Hole 10. 549.
Oh, baby.
What'd you say?
550.
Oh, so you're within one.
I was 1 foot off.
Yeah, so we're going to give you that.
Yeah, you are.
All right, I'll go by the catch. I'm gonna see. Let me check and see if any of the other ones were like tremendously far off. I'm actually curious now. What would be the other one that would have been like super 13 far? 13
would be interesting.
Well, that we've already done.
That we already did. 5.
5 was that is like 100 feet different.
Okay,
so you're actually closer on 5. You're well within your goal though, so I'm not super worried about it.
But if it gets close,
we will bring that in. We will bring that in.
The other one should be pretty accurate.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna stick with the caddy book.
Okay.
Hole 11 is next.
I feel like there's no way I can get there in 2 shots. No, I can definitely get there in 2 shots.
Yeah, you can get there on 2 shots.
We're gonna say 825.
Well, it's a bomb.
825.
734.
Wow.
And this one plays the same on both.
Wow, okay. So 100 off, basically. Hole 12's 960 some feet.
961?
I said 60 some. Oh. We can go 61.
901.
Okay.
So 60 foot difference.
13, it just depends on what pin A is. Because I know the long one's 999.
Right.
So I'm going to kind of meet myself in the middle and go with 880. So I'm just kind of playing the game because I don't know which pin's A.
Both of them are longer than 880.
Really?
896 is a short pin. The A pin is the longer pin, 999.
So I would have nailed that if I would have just went with it. Yeah. But okay, that's fine.
All right, you're at 694 right now. You're doing fine.
I believe, is a lot longer than it seems. So I'm going to go 405.
413.
Okay.
Very good.
15. That's another tricky one. I'm going to say 525.
Wow, 539.
Nice.
That was a good one.
16 is also kind of tricky because it's so downhill. 380.
391. Okay. You're heating up now.
17, 249.
You just knew it.
Is that it?
On the dot.
18.
That was impressive. See, that's the kind of thing I was wondering if he was going to know that for like half the holes. I didn't know.
18. We'll go 430.
Are we thinking about the same hole?
18?
430?
I guess it's 5 something. I'm just thinking I throw a mid and then a little hyzer.
More than a little hyzer.
Okay, yeah, it's okay, like a 525?
647.
Okay, we'll see. I'm fine, though. Dang. I'm within my
range. I don't think I would have guessed that it was long, though.
If I was like pressed to think about it a lot more,
so
but
you were
I knew.
You were under 1,000 feet, so you were easy within your goal.
I was easy with my goal.
Yeah, that was pretty impressive. You definitely knew over half of them pretty close. There definitely is Winthrop. Now that I'm looking at it, I'm realizing that Winthrop has a lot of tricky distances. Par fours are always tough, but it's tough because there's a lot of par fours that bend in interesting directions where you're like, I'm not sure what the distance would actually read because I'm throwing.
Yeah.
And then some holes you have to throw shorter shots.
Well, it's also tough because like a lot of times what it does is it puts your landing zone where it's like a full mid or a soft fairway if you hit the landing zone.
Right, right.
To where like it makes you make weird decisions. Yes. I don't even know if that's by design or if it just happens. But speaking of different holes out here, let's actually throw it over to the course where we'll break down some holes to watch going into this week.
The time has finally come for the United States Disc Golf Championship to kick off, and we're going to be out here looking over some of the key holes that have been going into this week. We're starting out here with hole number one. If this was hole 3 or 4 or even 7 in the event, it would probably be the easiest hole on the course. But with you just starting off the tournament, just starting off your round, this hole can get tricky. It has 3 different mandos and a low ceiling you have to hit off the tee, which makes what should be a very straightforward tee shot a little bit more intimidating, a little bit more treacherous, if you will. And a bad start here could really set a bad tone for the rest of the round and possibly even the rest of the tournament. Be on the lookout for players getting a good start with a birdie here and then carrying that into the rest of their round.
Our next hole to watch is the very scenic hole 5. Hole 5 is the first time that players are going to be forced to make a big decision on the course. It's also the first time that water's in play, which could mean losing a very key disc for the rest of the round. Players here, if they can get past hole 5, are going to be set for a great round because this is one of the first blow-up holes that they'll have to encounter. Getting through hole 5 without taking any blunders could be huge for somebody's round.
Next up is hole 13. This is one of the more iconic holes with a lot of history on it. A great drive will put players on a risky decision of do they go for the eagle or do they settle just for a birdie. But going for the eagle will bring in risks of higher and higher scores. This is one of the first holes that starts a stretch of several holes that could really put brakes to a great round that players have going coming down the stretch.
All right, we're here at the final hole to watch here at USDGC, hole 17, possibly the most iconic hole in all of disc golf. No lead is safe leading up to hole 17. They've changed it a little bit over the years to make it a little less difficult, but you can still take a 7 with no problem after going to the drop zone. And there's a lot of things that can shake up here on hole 17. It seems like the simplest of shots, but when you've just made that long walk to the tee pad and you're trying to protect the lead, it can get hairy very quickly. All right, now that we've gone over a few holes to watch, let's throw it over to the prize pick breakdown.
And welcome back into the Prize Picks Breakdown. Thank you so much for Prize Picks for being a sponsor of this episode. Prize Picks is the first to offer fantasy disc golf. You can play over at prizepicks.com. And if you use code GRIP, you can receive 100% instant deposit match up to $100. So if you put $75 in, boom, you get another $75. You're sitting at a pretty $150 there. Prize Picks is the easy way to play daily fantasy. You pick 2 to 5 players and an over/under on their projections. You can win up to 10x on any entry. It's just you versus the projected numbers. PrizePicks has a ton of stats to choose from, including this tournament, finishing spot, and stroke play. If you want to see where we broke down the finishing spot, you can look over on Debate Night. And here, we're going to be going through the stroke play. So again, head over to prizepicks.com. Use code GRIP to play along. And also, special bonus for USDGC Week. If you pick along with us, meaning that you pick the exact same ones we pick and it hits, you get a 25% bonus for playing along with either Trevor or myself. So huge thanks again to Prize Picks for being a sponsor of Grip Locked and offering all of this sick stuff to you. So let's look at where they have the lines for, round one out here. I'm going to just briefly read through all of these. There's a lot of options out there. And then Trevor and I will break down the most interesting ones and let you know what we picked and why we picked it. So they have Paul's line currently set at 59. Ricky also set at 59. Eagle, they actually adjusted it to 58.5. Chris Dickerson sitting at a 60. Calvin Heimberg at a 60. Kevin Jones at a 60.5 is alongside James Conrad also at a 60.5, which I believe that got adjusted as well.
Yes.
Adam Hamm is sitting at a 60.
I think.
Nate Sexton is at a 61.5, which I know that got adjusted. Simon Lazat sitting at a 62. Kyle Klein at a 60. Nicola Castro at 62.5. Emerson Keith at 62.5. Paul Ulibarri at 62. Double G at 62.5, Drew Gibson at 61.5, Ezra at 64, Colleen at 63, Brody Smith at 65, and AB at 62.5. There was a lot more players on that list than I expected when I started reading that list. So sorry if that was boring.
Also a lot of movement.
There was a lot of movement.
Yeah, the lines are live. So
if you're new to this, basically what happens is you pick, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 players. You can pick them as a power play or a flex play. And you have to have an over and an under within that. But basically, you're picking like Paul to 59. If you pick the over, you will get paid out if it goes 60 or above, under 58 or below. Ties, he gets wiped off your picks, and it basically adjusts your flex play or power play, whatever it is. No, power play if it ties. I actually don't know what happens there, but so let's look at what we have picked here. So I personally chose to go with one unit on a 5-player flex play.
Yes, I also did the 5-player.
Okay, we both did the five player flex play. I just like the way that kind of works out, shakes down. I'll walk you through just a brief overview of mine, and then I think we can both kind of talk through why we did and didn't put players on this list. So I have a Drew Gibson, 61.5 was the line here. He's still at that. I went with the under for Drew. I took the Paul Ulibarri over on 62, the Nico LoCastro under at 62.5, which I believe, did he change? There's Nico. No, he's still 62.5. The Nate Sexton, I took the under at 62. A lot of people must have been thinking the same way as me because he's at 61.5 now. I took the Calvin Heimberg under as well at 60. So if you pick those exact same ones, you get a 25% bonus when it hits.
Yeah, so I have some similar ones and quite a few different ones as well. So I took one over. I was feeling the unders this time around. Last time I was feeling the over. This time I liked a lot of unders. So I did take one over. I took Garrett Gurthy as my over. It's tough to pick an over, but Garrett Gurthy hit over on my last one, so I decided to go with him again. Mostly just because of the putting struggles. That's pretty much it. Like I know he throws.
He's
far,
gonna
so.
Throw far enough that he might not have to putt.
Right.
But we'll
see. We'll see. I picked Drew Gibson under 61.5. We've been hanging out around Drew, watching him throw.
So. Apparently, you're not the only one feeling the double G over because he's at 62.5 now.
Yes, that one did trend up. Yeah, Drew, we've been watching him play. So
yeah, that's the same reason
tough,
Drew's on mine.
Tough not to.
Drew is looking good out there.
Brody, I've also been watching play, so I have him under 65.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm confident he can get a couple under par. And then I went with, these are two picks that I went with based on kind of history. I've got Colling under 63 and Sexton under 62.
Yeah.
We know the Sexton's been getting picked under. That's adjusted down to 61.5 now.
Well, the Sexton under just makes so much sense. This guy, he knows this course like no other. He plays Sexton golf out here. Basically, he stays within the ropes. He attacks when he knows he can attack, and he doesn't when he knows he can't. It's hard to imagine a world where he doesn't shoot a 61.
I think him and Colleen could both come out hot for
Colleen, the
just
because
they've been around.
Only reason I didn't like Colleen here is I just, usually throughout the course of a season, we see him some.
Yeah.
I feel like I haven't seen Colleen in a while.
No, you're right. He
will feel like he's home here.
Yeah.
You're right there. He's won before. He can definitely do it again. But I just felt like the percentage-wise was a bigger
risk.
There's
definitely a lot of unders that I like. I like the Anthony Barella under.
Mm-hmm.
I like the Nico LoCastro under, which I think...
That's what I took that one.
Yeah, that one.
Nico's a very consistent player out
Nico
here.
Nico is a great under. I don't mind the Heimberg under either. That's not bad at all.
Heimberg under was my biggest kind of risk play there because he does have to get to a 59. He will have to shoot 7 under. Weather is going to be a factor, as we'll talk about here in just a little bit. But Calvin Heimberg last year wasn't affected by weather at all.
Right.
I think Calvin just has that gene of like, he gets excited when it rains because what's the golfer who basically said, when it rains, I've already beat half the field?
Tom Watson, yeah.
Yeah, basically, that's Calvin, I think, at disc golf. Like, when it rains, he's like, bring it.
Yeah, he sees it. It's like in Mario Kart when the lightning hits everybody and you're like in eighth place and you know it's time to
you're
catch
like,
up.
Oh, here we go.
That's like the weather in disc golf is Calvin's like, all right, everybody's going to start making mistakes, getting upset. Well, it's time for me to gain ground.
Yeah. So that's one of the things that kind of played into my decision there. The Yuli over, I just don't think this course plays for Yuli.
Yeah, it's tough to pick an over in this field.
Yeah, it was tough to pick an over, but the other thing is it's tough to pick either way, because
USDGC
is so unpredictable that all of these could do whatever, but Yuli, I just feel like it's going to be tough for him to shoot far under par. simply because he doesn't have that elite level distance.
Yeah.
And so there's going to be some shots where it's going to require him to throw very hard. And when you're throwing very hard, it's hard to also be very accurate.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's kind of why I was leaning with the Yuli over. But don't forget, if you play along with us over at prizepicks.com, use code GRIP to get up 100% match on up to your first $100 deposit. And also, if you, you know, pick alongside Trevor or myself, you can get an additional 25% bonus if we hit. So thanks again to PrizePicks for being a sponsor of Grip Locked. And they'll be with us all week. We're going to be doing different different versions of the PrizePicks breakdown each round as the lines update and adjust. We just had Chick-fil-A. Yeah, Chick-fil-A, so
hitting you hard.
The Chick-fil-A is hitting. But let's look at a little bit more detailed preview of the USDGC and the Throw Pink Women's Disc Golf Championship here. Now, so we've had a chance now to play the course once, just me versus you.
Yeah.
That video came out. We've also had the chance to walk the course several additional times. Mm-hmm. Those videos have either come out or are coming out. The Drew Gibson one actually drops the same day as this podcast, so that'll be exciting.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on the course, this year's version of the course, now that you've played it out there?
I would say one of the big things about the course is it is deceptive because it looks very scoreable as it's been the last couple days. And the reason that it becomes not so scoreable is for two reasons. Number one, because the wind and weather.
Yeah.
A lot of times, especially the wind, a lot of times picks up in the afternoon. I mean, we played early in the morning even
on a
pretty calm day. So that adds so much difficulty because without the wind, it's incredibly scoreable. But I think the biggest thing is there is just very, very small margin for error on certain holes. And on the holes where you can make that tiny little, like that small little error, it can just pile up really quickly. Like I think typically, like there are some courses where guys are going to be close to par, and it's because it's just like they have a couple pars here, a couple birdies here, a couple bogeys here, a couple pars, birdies here.
Goodness. And a lot of pars.
A lot of pars in the middle. USDGC, you're going to see the most colorful scorecards out there. You're going to, a guy who's playing aggressive, like Paul, for example. I mean, we watched some coverage over the last few days, and it's going to be like this again this year, I think, where you're going to see scorecards that are just filled with,
they're all over the place.
Bogeys, birdies, there's going to be shapes all over the scorecard. There's just going to be not a lot of pars. And I think that has to do with the way the OB plays too, is because guys are going to get aggressive, and if it succeeds, they're making birdie. If it doesn't, they're making bogey. Par is a rare score at Winthrop, which makes it very exciting and also very nerve-wracking. But like me and you out there, I feel like every hole we got up to, we felt like even you and I were like, we can score on this hole.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, if you and I played a pro level course, we went out to Angry Beaver today,
for example,
and we stepped up to every hole thinking we're not scoring. But USDGC, we were there thinking,
well, that's
we
the tough
score.
Thing is, yeah, and every hole
we didn't
is
very much.
Every hole is scorable, but every hole is also big scorable. If you know what I'm saying,
yeah.
You can go anywhere from under par to multiple over par, because there is a lot of places where, not necessarily exactly stroke and distance, but a similar stroke and distance type play is in play, where it's like your OB options are the drop zone that's still 370 feet away or your previous lie. So like if you're on the green, you're just re-putting from the same spot. Right. You don't really have that nice benefit to where things can really start to build up. But specifically the things I noticed is some of these were in place like last year, I believe, but I hadn't actually seen them in person. Hole one, I think if hole one was hole four or five, I think I said this in the breakdown, it'd probably be one of the easiest holes on the course. But just the third mando just adds something else in your mind. And then the ceiling just looks lower.
It is not an easy shot. It used to be easier. The mandos by themselves wouldn't be too bad, or the ceiling by itself would be too bad, but the combination
just makes you think.
You're basically throwing into a box. Like, I need to throw this left, right, up, down, perfect.
And then when you add in the fact that that he just said your name at the tee of the United States Disc Golf Championship, and hole one, like I said in the breakdown, really is going to set the tone, not only for the round, but possibly for your tournament. If you bogey hole one, it's going to take some mental fortitude to step up on hole two and throw a good shot.
Yeah, the difference in just momentum between getting, even just like,
it's crazy too, because it's to a lot of players, it's like they really need to get that birdie. So yeah, like even a par can be a little bit.
It can throw you off.
And throw you off. Or you could make a huge, you could get a roll away and then make a huge putt for par, and then it's huge. Like there's so many opportunities to change the course. You almost don't get out of that hole thinking, okay, like that was hole one. Like you're either like behind or ahead. Like
yeah.
It's a very game-changing hole.
The most obvious change, the most talked about change is hole nine. We've dubbed it Big Moz because the mozzarella sticks are right in front of the tee. I will say the picture on Twitter, I believe Jordan Castro had posted it. We talked about it last week some. A little deceptive. I don't know if it made it look better or worse. But once you're in, in person, it looks different.
Yeah, a little bit.
It just looks different.
Yeah.
They're closer to the tee. But realistically, like we were talking about this a lot on debate night. So if you want to hear more of that conversation, you can head over there. But basically, the conclusion we came to is like what it does to the course as far as the hole is good.
Yeah.
Like the change it makes you think about the hole a little bit more.
Right.
The secondary conclusion, this isn't what I was about to talk about, was why did hole nine really need to change?
Right. That's like the first thing is I think the hole nine, where hole nine fits in the course, because a lot of times courses have to be redesigned based on how much space they have. And they shortened this hole, but there's no point to that. Like, you're just walking up to the tee pad.
Yeah.
Through where the fair... So, like, there is so much space on hole nine to make a hole where you don't have to use the poles as the defense of that hole. You could do other things.
Yeah.
But it's also a very windy hole.
Yes. But the way the poles make the defense of the hole, I like. I just don't like the poles.
Yeah.
That's what it kind of comes down to.
There's just an eyesore.
But it is going to be
it's going to be a polarizing disc golf hole.
Because
when somebody in contention smacks one of those poles, I'm going to laugh. Like, it's going to make me, like, chuckle for sure.
No, absolutely.
Unless it's somebody that I'm rooting for, and then it's going to suck the air out of my lungs. So
it's definitely going to be an interesting hole, and it's definitely going to be a hole that's talked about a lot. Trying to think through the rest of the course. The only other thing that it was new to me, seeing it in person, was hole 17. I believe when I watched the coverage last year, this is actually where both pins were, but the B pin, the right pin, is not that different anymore. It used to be kind of pushed back. It was a much more safer pin.
Yeah.
This one, that safe landing zone on the right side of the island, still there, but you're going to have like a 60-foot putt to both pins now because they're both up against the hay bale short.
Yeah, the difference.
And the landing zone for pin A, I believe, is the left pin.
Yeah.
It's like a 10-foot circle.
Oh, it's like nothing.
Like, if you... To park that hole, you threw a bad shot, realistically. Yeah,
pretty much every player is going to throw the same shot to both pins, just like starting it just outside of the hay bales and landing pretty far to the right. The only difference is to the rightmost B pin, you're basically going to have a 30-footer, where to the other pin, you're going to have a 60-footer.
Yeah.
It's probably not going to change a lot of strategies, but yeah, if you see somebody throw one underneath the basket, especially
on the A
pin...
It was a terrifying shot.
Then they were not trying that.
Yeah, it was definitely a terrifying shot. It does set up well for the ace. We've heard of chain outs, and Brody was able to ace it today. I believe someone else aced it earlier in the practice round. It definitely, the shot coming in will flash the chain to the A basket. If you're throwing a good shot in. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's an exciting part.
Yeah, that is a hole where the ace is a good shot because you are trying to land to the right of the basket. So if you miss the basket, you would have gone to the right of it.
Yeah. And the other thing that I noticed that seemed new to me was the way they defined the OB. Obviously, it's still using rope. That's what Winthrop's known for. Mm-hmm. But they had, like, cut out the grass where the rope is. Like, there's no grass there. It's almost like they used, like, a ditch witch, right?
I think they kind of did it so that when a disc gets close to the line, it's very easy to see.
Yeah, I love it.
It's great. And it must have taken a lot of work.
Yeah.
And it looks great.
And the other thing they did is most of the course, they didn't cut the OB.
They let it grow longer.
So like when you're on hole 12's tee, for instance, you're up on the Coliseum looking down across the valley.
Yeah.
You can clearly see the in and out of bounds.
Yeah.
Regardless of like if you can see the stakes or not,
because you can
see the darker, thicker grass versus the fair. I love it.
Yeah. The only
I've never noticed that before. They might do it every year, but yeah, I love it.
The only step up you could go from there would be striping the fairway would be super cool. The fairway was striped.
And I think the grass had to be a little bit nicer.
No, they did it. They did it at New London once. You remember?
They did.
Kenny striped it.
They did.
You can stripe the fairway. So they did that, and also it's sometimes it's a really cool effect, and this one is very extreme. But It's really cool when golf courses have roughs that are different kinds of grass. So it's like darker grass in the rough,
just in general,
and then lighter grass. That's cool. But no, this is it's really cool using something as simple as just let's mow shorter in the fairway, and then all of a sudden you can see the OB so much clearer, and it looks very natural.
Yeah,
it's a very nice way to change that.
And it's very true. One other thing about this is the first thing about the Throw Pink Women's Disc Golf Championship, and I've heard some players kind of mention it, is I have to keep reminding myself that this is just an A tier for the women.
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm way more excited and feel way more hyped up for this event than I did for U.S. Women's.
Yeah, it's just something about the course. It has nothing to do with the name or... Because U.S. Women's, was that run by the PDGA?
Yeah, remember that was the...
Throw Pink is owned by Innova.
U.S. Women's was a whole issue with Paige.
Right.
When
you can't,
they're like crisscrossing fairways and
I don't know if the PDGA thought that just like separating the event and then calling it U.S. Women's, like, haha, we get the name U.S. Women's, is like, that doesn't do anything.
Well, they're still doing it next year. That's why another thing I want to bring it up is like, I was really hoping that like Throw Pink Women's happens this year alongside the USDGC, and it's like, all right, let's do the logical thing here, put them both at the same time on the prestigious course. Because like Throw Pink Women's is still going to happen.
The women should absolutely have a major, like,
because this is like qualified throughout the entire year. Like,
yeah, it's very odd that it, like, everything about it makes it, leads it up to be the most prestigious event. It's at the end of the year, there's the qualifying, and yet it's just an A tier.
It'll probably be talked about and watched more than U.S. Women's was.
Yeah. It's very...
And yet it's an A tier.
Yeah, I really wish they could have the same thing going, U.S. Women's and U.S. Men's, both at Winthrop. That would be great.
Yeah, it just...
That would be great. Or... Because
that's what happened with the Women's Nationals last year.
Or just do U.S. Women's at that earlier date at Winthrop. They can have their own event.
I don't like that as much.
What's
personally.
That? Well, if I think the whole point was them having their own U.S.
thing. I understand that side, so but like, I think that...
If that's what they want to do, I'm just
the
saying.
The hype and everything build for USDGC, and I think that it's a lot easier to get me hyped for an event happening right now, the Throw Pink Women's, which Women's National Championship, they could have still called it that, because that's what it was called last year. It wasn't U.S. Women's.
Yeah.
They just made the Women's National Championship a major. But regardless, it's a lot easier for me to like tack on like, oh my gosh, there's something else to be hyped about, versus getting me hyped for Winthrop back in April, letting it die down, and then getting me hyped for USDGC in October.
I would still be hyped for it.
I would probably be more hyped than I was for U.S. Women's, but I think I'll be the most hyped if it's this scenario but a major, if that makes sense.
You want both events at the same time?
In this case, yeah.
Okay.
I think in the future, I agree with you. Because I think in the future, there's eventually going to be a women's tour and a men's tour. Like, that's that's how it's going to split. Because eventually, you just can't sustain both. Yeah. But I think right now, for the growth of FPO, it makes sense. The most hyped event on the MPO side is USDGC.
No, you're right about that.
It's very easy to just tag in FPO, playing the same course, you know, all of that, and coverage can work well together. You already have all the media crews here.
It is true, too. Build it. They put on such a massive event for USDGC. Like, they can't really do that twice a year.
Yeah,
so
it'd be very hard
to
do it twice a
year. The FPO field get to reap the benefits of all the work going in.
Exactly, exactly.
That does make sense.
I just think it's weird to reap the benefits at an A tier.
Yeah. Well, I'm
and
glad.
It's not this, I mean.
They're still going to run them an awesome event.
They're gonna run them a major event.
Yeah.
Like, everything about this event is going to be a major except for just the tier status.
Yeah,
and
it's
how many
odd
points
that, like, when
gets.
We talk about, like, top women's players, like, we talk about top men's players, we always think world titles, U.S. titles. Those are, like, the two hand-in-hand, where, like, women's players, we just kind of talk about world titles. You know, because women...
U.S. women's just doesn't have that hype because it rotates.
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing. And I guarantee you it's going to be very confusing next year when we're talking on the podcast to separate the Throw Pink Women's Champion from the U.S. Women's Champion.
Yeah.
It's going to be very hard to remember... Maybe they'll be the same person,
right?
But it's gonna be very hard to remember who's who, because this is gonna feel more like a U.S. women's title than the U.S. women's did, to me at least.
It's the players' U.S. title. Let's just dub it the players' U.S. title.
I like it.
There you go.
You know, we're just gonna, whoever wins this, we're gonna call the U.S. women's champion.
There you go.
Boom.
Did
control the narrative. A good old-fashioned squeeze out. the other thing that's coming this week is weather. You know it's coming. It's USDGC week.
I got to remind myself like right now to bring my rain jacket.
I think I'll be able to remind you in the morning because I'm not forgetting.
Mine is in the car.
Yeah, so you're definitely
that
not
was
forgetting.
An incredibly smart move. We're gonna match. So that's
that'll
cool.
be awesome.
Did you have the gray one too?
I can't find my freaking gray one. One of you stole it.
No, we. I did not.
What size is yours?
We're all wear a large.
Mine is a large.
Steeler.
What?
If I go out there and there's a large in that car, it's mine. That's all I'm
gonna say. So which one do you have?
I have the. I brought a gray Discraft one, and then I have a navy and burgundy.
Boo.
Boo. My wife got it for me for Christmas. It's very nice.
Team Foundation all the way. Boo.
And then I have the navy and burgundy foundation one I brought too. I'm coordinating with my polos. So, get at me.
Okay, polos, boys.
As of right now, let me pull up the current weather. Weather boy?
Dark.
Why, I went to weather.com.
The weather is dark.
Who does that?
I didn't mean to.
Did you go to weather.com?
Yeah, I did. It was embarrassing.
I used to go to weather.com. Weather channel?
Everyone used to.
He
then
said the weather
Google
channel
added this.
App on my phone. All right, iPod Touch, I should say.
The rain chance has drastically gone down. That's today. Still has gone down decently. Looks like there is overall about a 40% chance of rain tomorrow. And the wind doesn't look too bad right now because I'm looking at Bedford County, Virginia.
Here's the thing.
And not Rock Hill, South Carolina. Get pranked, podcast. Okay.
There you go.
It's 60% chance. Wind still doesn't look that bad. So everything I said is basically the same.
Basically,
it looks like the highest percent chance is around when lead card is going to be teeing off, gets lower. So rain is definitely going to be, it's just scattered thunderstorms technically. Rain weather is definitely going to be somewhat of a factor.
I don't have a problem with
and
mild.
And it's in the forecast through Saturday.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with mild rain and just a little bit of wind. Like I just don't want a washout.
Yes.
Or storms.
Correct.
Like if it's just going to be a little bit of rain, like that's fine. Like that's cool.
Little rain, little
it's
wind.
Part of the game, yeah.
You know, it's just.
But I don't want to have to watch poor Calvin Heimberg looking like a wet dog out there and his polo like stuck to him.
Yeah.
And everybody's just like looking around like they're lost because it's raining so hard.
Yeah.
That's not fun.
That's like we watched some of the coverage from last year, like yesterday, and everybody just looks like so pitiful out there.
Yeah.
It was so sad.
Brody will not be fun to walk with in live tweet if it's pouring down rain the whole time. I just have a feeling.
I mean... I'm going to be fine because we already played the course in gorgeous weather multiple times.
Yeah.
So yeah, now chilling. We just get to walk, tweet, and wear a rain jacket, you know? But we'll definitely keep you updated every day as the weather kind of changes and all of that fun stuff. But, I mean, at least it is only going to be the high tomorrow. Looks like it's 78. So it'll at least just be a nice day temperature-wise. But if it's pouring down rain, you're not going to care. What the weather is, what the temperature is. You're actually, I would rather it be cold and rainy because then you can bundle up with jackets.
Yeah, for sure. Nothing like a humid rain, gross.
Worst thing on earth.
Gross. You're just feeling like you're in like a sauna suit in your rain jacket.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Jeez.
Can't have it.
Disgusting.
Disgusting.
All right, let's get into some predictions here.
What just happened?
Quick little like switch up, which you actually might not know this, Connor.
Okay.
I think you do.
Yeah, he does.
You definitely do.
We fought about it earlier.
Oh, yeah.
Well, no, because what? So the technical for the dark horse pick, I think my dark horse pick is out.
No,
I think I can't take it.
I disagree with this world rankings thing. I think we should just all agree that it is a dark horse pick.
Okay.
Based on like just the how.
Because what I was going to say is
any
a dark horse pick of the top 10, it has to be outside the top 10. The guy I'm picking is technically in the top 10.
He's still a dark horse pick.
But I think he's a pretty dark horse pick. Yeah. But let's go with actual
predictions
first.
Anybody you pick to win this tournament is a dark horse pick because anybody can win.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, so we have our predictions, which is who we think are going to win on MPO and FPO. And then we have a dark horse pick, which is like this person could win.
It's different than our normal dark horse pick.
It's like a sleeper pick because we're
right.
not going.
That's a good way to describe it.
Yeah, we're not going below 1,000 rated here because there's only a handful of them. So we're going with like this person, if they pop off and the stars align, could win.
Yes.
Dark horse. On the MPO side though, just top three predictions. I'm going Ricky taking it down his first US championship this year. He's due. He is definitely due. If you watched debate night, you saw I took the under third place. I think he's going to be in first or second. And my prediction is he ends up first. I do think Calvin Heimberg is going to make a charge. I think he's going to come in second. And I'm not going to say my third place because it gives away my dark horse pick. So when I say my dark horse pick, just know I put him as my third place pick. Wow. That's how confident I am in this guy.
That's impressive. My predictions, I've got the weather warrior, Chris Dickerson.
Oh.
Taken down.
Back to back.
Something that has not happened since...
I'll say, who's done it?
Back in the Climo Schultz days.
Was it Climo or Schultz?
Not sure which one, but it was one of those two.
It's been a long time.
I think it might have been Schultz. Like maybe 0203.
Because Schustrick went 12, or 10, 12, 14.
Yeah. It's something that does not really happen, but I'm gonna throw it out there. It's time for it to happen again.
All right.
I've got Heimberg second, and then Nate Sexton.
Oh,
in third.
Sneaky third.
He's just good at this course.
He is very good at this
course. He plays it a lot.
So the dark horse pick, my dark horse pick, that is also my third place pick, is Mr. Cookie Monster himself, Andrew Marweed. I've got him. Look, he is peaking at the right time this season. Trevor just headbutted his mic if you wonder what that was. He's peaking at the right time this season. He has a great controlled forehand. We actually were talking about this the other week. Everyone says it's the sidearm championships, the United States mm-hmm. sidearm championship. Yet, look at the recent winners.
That's very strange.
Chris Dickerson, James Conrad. Go farther back. Steve Brinster. I mean, you can go all the way back to Climo and
Feldberg.
But nobody threw it.
There is a lot of
winners. But Feldberg, Schustrick. I mean, there's more winners that are backhand dominant than forehand dominant. But I'm still going with... I'm falling susceptible to my own trap of it being the United States Sidearm Championship and thinking Andrew Marweed is going to be up there.
So
even though I don't think I threw two sidearms.
We actually mentioned this whole theory to Drew Gibson, I believe it was. And he then followed by saying he thought it was because people say that, but it's actually the lefty backhand that would be ideal, which leads me to my dark horse pick, Chris Clemens.
He does pop off here.
I'm not holding a grudge because I bought a Chris Clemens Judge and I didn't like the way it flew for some reason.
Yeah,
so.
I don't know why, because I think it flew great. I think it just was different than you expected it.
Yeah, you're right.
It started flippy.
It has a really cool stamp, though.
And it feels great.
It's a very cool stamp.
It feels great. Who's your dark horse pick, sir?
My dark horse pick is definitely Drew Gibson. I'm feeling really good about Drew Gibson. We've shot a couple of videos with him recently, and he looks good out there. He's not doing a lot of anything other than what he's trying to do.
He's pure in lines right now.
Does it make sense?
That made perfect sense.
It feels like every throw I've seen him
point
throw,
shoot right
he's
now.
Doing. He is hitting exactly what he's trying to do.
Yeah.
I have not seen him make a mistake in the videos that we've been shooting.
Yeah.
And I think that he's going to take it down.
In case you hadn't heard, we've been filming with Drew Gibson recently.
Yeah. Sorry for name dropping him 100 times.
We've been filming with Drew Gibson recently.
Oh, Drew? Me and Drew? Yeah, we're cool.
Yeah. So Drew Gibson's been in our channel a few times.
Do you guys remember last week when we were hanging out with Drew and
Drew Gibson?
We're first name basis.
I felt like every time we brought up his name, it's like, yeah, well, we've been doing videos with him. You know what I mean? Again, you either die a hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain. But realistically.
That phrase.
I do. It applies to so much.
It's good. I wish it didn't take so long to deliver. You know, that's the only problem
that's
with
a
that
good,
phrase.
Yeah, that's true.
But it's still funny.
Had a joke coming out and had to hold myself back.
Okay.
But when we were at New London, he played way better out there than I expected him to.
Who did?
Drew. We were filming with him at New London. And then USDGC, again, like you were saying, that's a great pick. I actually tried making that pick, and then Connor literally yelled at me.
Yeah, he did yell
it's
at
because
me.
That's because yesterday I said in the morning, I'm not going to lie, guys, I think Drew might be our next U.S. champion.
And then you said it to
him. Because he's looking really good. And then I said it to Drew whenever we were filming with him, and then Hunter tried to take that
I
pick
I tried
me
to
today,
lock him in.
And I was like, no, dude, I already called
it's a
it.
Great pick. But Andrew Marweed, once I thought of him, I think he's a better pick. So
that's fine.
Andrew Marweed could be our next USDGC champion, but Ricky Wysocki, we should do that like 2-minute segment. No, we shouldn't.
Can Andrew Marweed fans be called the Marwads?
No, they're the what?
Marwads.
The Marwads.
Why wouldn't they just be weeds?
Because I think
because
like
it's funnier.
A negative connotation, I guess.
I guess that's true. Well, Marwad isn't.
It is, but it's a little more ironic.
I like. Why can't they be like the cookie crumbs? Because he's the guy who always marks as many as a cookie and then eats it after he hits a big putt.
That's why. I didn't understand the reference. Now I remember.
Yeah.
And that
he's
is
done
funny.
That multiple times where he uses a mini bangs a putt in your face and then yes. looks you in the eyes. And
I think that's hilarious.
Cookie. That's great.
I wish he had Cookie in his name
that is
somewhere.
Amazing. And he should try and get a Nabisco sponsorship or something. Also,
Famous Amos.
Famous Amos. Yeah. That would be such a great marketing plug. Shout out. Players need to start doing things that are so obviously marketable that, like, the second there's a chance, then it's going to be marketed. Like, that, for example. That is, like, if you were a cookie company and you stumbled on a disc golf, that's the most obvious marketing decision of your life. So, like, just if you're a disc golfer right now, just become, like, make something super obvious. Drew Gibson plays in Vans. Now, this one is a little bit more of a stretch because you got to get Vans, literally
yeah,
Vans.
Yeah, Vans is a little bit bigger.
But for, like, if he were to get... If Vans were to get like found out about disc golf, it's very obvious. We market the guy who's wearing
Vans. That would be off the wall.
Anyways, I'm just saying that that's like something that disc golfers should start doing.
If you can't tell, it's 11 o'clock at night. Sensibility is out the
like
window.
Somebody needs to become like the sunflower seed guy. Like, oh my gosh, that's Nate Sexton. He's always got sunflower seeds. And then
that's
like,
just every disc golfer.
Yeah.
You know what? I was just trying to make a point. My eyeballs feel like they're burning out of their sockets.
Let's just get to the FPO Throw Pink Women's predictions here. I got third place, Valerie Mandujano. She's a great thrower of the disc. I think that's going to be the most important thing out here.
She's a great thrower of the disc, well, and that is important in the disc golf tournament.
I think it's more important than putting here is what I'm saying.
You're right.
And she has great distance. I think you're going to need elite level distance. And to be very accurate, I think she has both.
Mm-hmm.
Second place... I've been saying this for who knows how long. The best thrower in the FPO field, Katrina Allen. She's going to come in second. And then this was a tough one, but I got Paige Pierce taking it down.
What are you doing picking Paige, man?
I got Paige
She's
Pierce taking it down.
She's broken our hearts so many times.
Fool me once.
She is a heartbreaker.
Shame on
year.
You. Fool me twice. Shame on me. Fool me
Fool
six
me times.
Thrice.
Yeah,
I'm just a fool.
All right. I stayed away from Paige for these picks.
All together? You're not even taking her in the top three?
Nope.
So who's
I've got Katrina Allen now? In third. I've got Haley King, been playing very well lately, in second. And I've got Sarah Hokum taking the win. I'm taking that.
I don't
watch
mind
her
Sarah
throw,
Hokum pick.
I watched her throw one drive on eight a few days ago, and it went so far.
It was very impressive.
He went so far, and in that moment, I just knew. Like there were, like I think she glanced in my direction, and I waved, and then I was like, something isn't like she's gonna win. Like I just felt there was like some kind of something in the air that like Sarah Hokum was winning this weekend.
We crossed past her and it was like it was one of the most amazing forehands.
It was
I'd
so good. And
seen.
I thought to myself,
it was incredible.
She's gonna throw that forehand all over this course.
Yeah.
Like for some reason, whenever I think about Sarah Hokum, I just think she's not getting in trouble. Like she's just gonna throw that forehand. She's gonna stay in bounds. And like you said, putting's her weakness. Not gonna be a huge deal in this tournament if you're tapping in pars. Sarah Hokum.
See, everybody. That is a great pick. I'll
do that just felt like such a solid point.
The only
like
reason I didn't put Haley King in my top three.
Tell me.
She's a crusher.
She is a crusher.
Yep.
I view Haley King the same way I viewed Eagle McMahon a few years ago.
Yes.
All the talent in the world needs the mental fortitude a little bit more. This tournament, you're going to need all the mental fortitude you got. You got to be Fort Knox
Paige
between
Pierce
your ears.
This year has had not a lot of mental fortitude.
That's true, but she's got it, though.
Somewhere she can find it again.
It's deep
Come
down
on,
within
Paige.
Her.
You're right.
But
we're
she's
rooting
got it.
For you, Paige.
I mean, Haley King, she's national tour champ.
She is. So. Haley King is a great player. It would not surprise me if she won. It wouldn't.
Would not surprise him. You heard it here. First.
You heard it here, guys.
Is this thing on? I would not be surprised if Haley King won. But
I hope it is.
What an like arrogant thing to do. Is this thing on?
Are you guys
I would not
listening.
Be,
are you guys listening still? Why? No, it wouldn't surprise me if she won because she's got all the talent in the world. I just personally think she's a few years away, maybe a year away.
Just a year.
From having enough winning experience to be able to like deal with a lot of adversity on the course. And you're going to deal with a lot of adversity
maybe
out
she
here.
Won't. Maybe she's birdie, par.
There's
birdie,
no way around
birdie,
it.
Par.
You can't play Winthrop Gold in rain with all the ropes and not face adversity.
Okay.
There's no way around it.
You're right.
There's not a single way.
No, there's not.
Nope.
Hopefully you've enjoyed this first episode of USDGC Week. We've definitely enjoyed it. Be sure to tune in to all of our social media channels to keep up with what's going down this week. We'll be coming to you as close as Grip Locked ever has been. Not ever has been, because we used to be live. ever will be again to being live, basically filming every night, late at night, uploading it first thing the next morning so you can get to your previous day's recap and looking ahead at what's going down on the live coverage so that as the round happens, you know what to be following, what to be looking for. And we'll also be breaking down the prize picks so that you can, you know, win along with us. It's going to be a great week. We can't wait to get out there. Yeah, we can't wait to get out there and bring you as much coverage as we are possibly allowed to. Don't forget to check links in the description below if you want to pick up the pay-per-view package or if you want to check out us on Twitter, Instagram, all that good stuff where we'll be doing as much as we can for you out on the course. You're not going to want to miss it. It's a big week. We'll see you same time, same place tomorrow when we give you the round one recap and looking forward to round two.